Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. This weekend, President Trump retweeted and thanked a supporter. But it turns out that Twitter account wasn't a real supporter, but an automated account, a bot. Bots are all over social media, promoting particular agendas, pumping out false information. Bots, including Russian-backed bots, played a potent role in the 2016 election, and they haven't stopped. This hour, On Point, social media bots driving the narrative. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. How do you sort real from robot on social media? And what is public opinion or news when bots are all over both? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York is Clint Watts, fellow at the Foreign Policy Research Institute and the Center for Cyber and Homeland Security at George Washington University, former FBI special agent. He's part of the team that launched the Hamilton 68 dashboard, which tracks Russian influence operations on Twitter. The dashboard is funded by the Alliance for Securing Democracy at the German Marshall Fund of the United States. Clint Watts, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
And from Seattle, Sam Woolley joins us, Director of Research for the Computational Propaganda Project at Oxford Internet Institute at the University of Oxford, fellow at Google Jigsaw, a tech incubator, think tank. Sam Woolley, welcome to On Point. Wonderful to have you here.
Thanks, Tom.
Already last November, Sam, you were writing, "Never have we seen such an all-out bot war." What was going on then? Is it still going on now?
What was unique was that we were seeing bots from both sides, so Democrat bots and Republican bots, tweeting back and forth at each other on Twitter, but also being used over other platforms like Facebook and Reddit to attack each other, but also to spread false information and to bolster viewpoints of particular candidates. As early as last May, we noticed bots being used in the primaries to boost the then candidate Donald Trump in the state of Nevada. It's been a pretty interesting time, and we've definitely been seeing a bot war, and it just continues to this day.
Clint, what's the big deal about bots and bot war and bots being all over our social media?
I think it comes down to the fact that Americans consume more and more of their information in their news through social media. And this is very different from past generations, where usually we went to standard or mainstream media news outlets like NPR or standard television channels or newspapers to get information. And so with the amount of content, the frequency that content is uploaded, at which people encounter that in social media, not only can you put in much false information or manipulated information, but you can do it at such a high volume that the more you see something, the more you believe it. And it becomes very challenging to overtake these bot applications in social media with truth.
Sam, what is a bot?
A bot's a bit of automated software that can do anything that a person would normally do. So bots exist as an infrastructural part of the internet. They always have. What we're concerned with here today, I think, is social media bots, which are bits of automated software that are used to create profiles on social media or to automate profiles on sites like Twitter and Facebook. And so what a bot does is oftentimes it can mimic a real person. It can be used to do anything that a person would do on social media. But I think one important thing to remember is that there's always a person behind the bot.
And Clint, a person maybe behind quite a lot of bots. You've got this new dashboard out. What are you tracking with your bot dashboard?
Over the last 3 years, my colleagues and I, J.M. Berger, Andrew Weisberg, and I had been watching Russian influence. And we originally came onto it with regards to the Islamic State in Syria and Iraq and some of the discussions in that space. But we continued to watch it over time. We've gone through tens of thousands of tweets and social media logs and things like that. And we identified a key network that we watch, and we've probably watched it for the most part over the last year and a half, to get some sense of what Russia wants U.S. audiences, English-speaking audiences, really to be talking about? You know, what's the content? What's the themes? And in that, we narrow down to a very, you know, tight set of accounts that we watch, and we use it as a tip-off. And some of them are real people. Some of them are overtly Russian state-sponsored, you know, outlets, and some are what we believe to be automated bots that just repeat that amount of, you know, a certain set of messages at a very high quantity, such that it saturates audiences that they're trying to influence. And so the dashboard essentially gives a summary view of that, that if you don't want to track down all these accounts, but you really understand, want to understand how Russia is trying to influence Americans, we provide, you know, top and trending hashtags, themes, overt content that the Russian state-sponsored news outlets put out, and try and do it in a way that Americans can understand really where this agenda comes from. And then if they see it, you know, awareness is the first step in encountering Russian active measures. But if they see this content, they can, you know, investigate it on their own and start to examine, okay, where is this information coming from? And is this something that I want to believe or not believe?
I mean, most of us first started hearing about this in the context of the 2016 election. But is it nonstop now, Clint? Is it going on right now? What's trending right now on your dashboard?
Yeah, I mean, right now what you'll see is two sort of phenomena that generally occur. One is if you want to influence an audience, you have to appear like that audience. And so what we notice from our Russian influence tracking is that they replicate the audience they want to influence. And the way they do that, one is by creating personas that look like that target audience. So we had detailed that at the Daily Beast about a year ago regarding an Incirlik air base maybe being overrun by protests. And so we went through some of what we believed to be bots and the common characteristics, which they had created bots that wanted to look like Trump supporters essentially. The second thing you do, though, is you have to talk like the audience. And to talk like the audience, you just retweet, you amplify those messages that are driving wedges in your target audience. So from the Russian standpoint, that is to sow chaos and disinformation. It is any societal cleavage that's there. It could be race, religion, rich versus poor. It's to push that content in there that the audience is already gravitating to and amplify it. The last part that, you know, I think you can find on the Hamilton 68 dashboard is the actual links that show up the most in the key network we monitor. And that is where Russia would try and insert actual themes and messages they want from their state-sponsored outlets. So you'll see RT and Sputnik News links that will pop up in there. And that's the influence point. So the first part is to infiltrate the audience, look like the audience, say what the audience is saying. And then it's to do placement, as we would say in information warfare, to place strategic content, strategic messages into that audience that you want amplified. And that's really what we try and show with that dashboard.
So what's been hot lately? I saw the hashtag Fire McMaster was one of the things out there, referring to H.R. McMaster, the National Security Council chief under Donald Trump. Why that? And what else has been hot lately?
Right. Fire McMaster was big going into the weekend because that was a very hot theme, particularly in alternative right communities. And so from the Russian perspective, the way I analyze it when I see it on the dashboard, it is a chaos in the White House that can be fomented by the Russians, meaning they want disorder. They want infighting. The whole idea of active measures is to use the force of politics rather than the politics of force to winnow away the United States from the inside out through democratic politics. And so a wedge issue like Fire McMaster, when it starts to trend, their goal would be to amplify it from a Russian perspective. They don't need to create the news. They just need to amplify it such that it's in the target audience. That was a big one going through the weekend. But you'll also see issues that are very much Russian foreign policy issues around Ukraine or Syria will pop up in there as well. What's critical, I think, to look at on our dashboard is you'll notice that the top hashtags rarely change. They usually match what the audience looks like. You'll see the hashtags that they retweet, they repost, are really about mimicking the audience they want to gain influence over. What we tend to tell people to look for is to look for those trending hashtags and the trending links because those are the ones that they're trying to amplify. And that will change from day to day. Sometimes you'll see hashtags pop up that are things that they want to promote because it's chaos essentially in the U.S. government. I think Mitch McConnell popped up on there over the last 24 hours, anything that's driving a wedge in our politics. Other times you'll see things that they want to attack. So ironically, Sputnik News talked to Ambassador Kislyak or had done an interview with him and had written up a story about our dashboard, the Hamilton 68 dashboard, and that was one of the trending URLs that even popped up on our dashboard. So we found that very reassuring that we were on the mark, that they were pushing content.
You're on their dashboard too.
Yeah, they don't like us and it shows up on our dashboard. So we feel we're fairly well zeroed in on what they're pushing in terms of themes.
Sam, Clinton says they want to go after wedge issues. They look for cleavage. They want to exacerbate it. But we have the feeling that polarization is already pretty strong in this country all on our own. I mean, how powerful is this world of bots and their influence, Sam? How much sway does it really have?
I think it has quite a lot. I think that polarization absolutely in the United States is a reality. We call it homophily, so birds of a feather flocking together and talking about politics. Bots serve to exacerbate this issue. What they do is push people to either side of the aisle. But what also we see is bots being used to attack the opposition. So that's another way that they are successful in sort of manufacturing a kind of consensus, which by what I mean is sort of creating the illusion of legitimacy of an issue or the illusion of opposition to an issue. And so bots sort of reinforce what Russia wants people to believe, but also what particular partisan individuals or groups in the United States want people to believe as well.
I mean, it's freaky. We I think pride ourselves that we all have sort of a sense of our country, our population, our you know, the polity in which we live, and yet if it is this potent, Clint, maybe we don't really have an accurate sense of what's going on around us, reading our own fellow countrymen and women.
Yeah, I think what tends to come out too in social media is what doesn't come out in real life as well. So people oftentimes harbor views that are very negative or antagonistic, and you don't see that in day-to-day life. But on social media, people feel more liberated to do that. And so in one way, on social media, you might get a little bit more accurate view of people's minds and what they really do think. And I think a lot of this antagonism, this sort of hatred that's built up in our country, it shows more in social media than it does in real life, and maybe that would change moving forward.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about bots shaping or twisting public opinion in this country's political wars in 2016, right now, and almost surely in the future. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Is it a bot world and we just live in it? Do you have a sense of, proof of, bots driving conversation, coloring your social media world? And do you discount certain things you see online? Even if we know the bots are out there, do they still end up shaping our view of what the world is thinking? Is there any way to keep it real anymore? With Sam Woolley, he's director of research for the Computational Propaganda Project at Oxford Internet Institute at the University of Oxford, joins us today from Seattle, Washington. Clint Watts is with us from New York, former FBI special agent. Now he's a fellow at the Foreign Policy Research Institute, the Center for Cyber and Homeland Security at the George Washington University, and part of this group that's got up a new dashboard tracking Russian influence operations on Twitter, of course, one large social media outlet. Our national conversation about this kind of all over the place. Here's the president last week at that rally in Huntington, West Virginia, attacking the Russia investigation, saying Russians were not involved in his campaign for election.
Most people know there were no Russians in our campaign. There never were. We didn't win because of Russia. We won because of you. That I can tell you.
There you go. Here's MSNBC's Ari Melber. This is back in March, reporting on an FBI investigation looking at Russian social media bots and the 2016 campaign and beyond.
Your social media feed may have been part of Russia's interference in the election. The FBI's counterintelligence division investigating whether some news sites like Breitbart benefited from or colluded with Russian operatives during the campaign. The issue is how sophisticated computer bots distribute online content and articles that could help Trump and hurt Clinton.
Okay, and here in March, ranking member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Democratic Senator Mark Warner of Virginia, here he is commenting on Russian interference in the election done through the work of bots.
There were upwards of 1,000 paid internet trolls working out of a facility in Russia, in effect taking over a series of computers, which are then called a botnet. They can then generate news down to specific areas.
Okay, right down to specific areas. What does he mean by that, Clint? Generating news down to specific areas.
That would be essentially replicating or creating social personas which replicate audience members in those specific locations they might want to target. And then it would also be, you know, tailoring the content that they're delivering to them so that it's specific to their needs and wants. So it's essentially creating a selection bias where you're going out and looking at a specific subset of the population to create a persona that looks like them, talks like them, and delivers content that is useful to their discussions.
Is it mostly news that they're passing on, or is it opinion, you know, attitudes, like a perspective or news or fake news? What's the main, you know,
right,
volume?
I think there's three ways to look at it. One is news, just truthful news. The other is manipulated truth, which I deliver a story to you, let's say, and then I put my characterization on that story. Like, can you believe this? We always knew they were up to this. You know, I add a phrase to it, which is very easy to do in social media. The other one is just deliberately false, you know, information. And the problem, you know, most people on everybody has this problem on social media is you are looking at so much content to do an assessment, a rigorous assessment of each one in just nanoseconds is impossible. You're going to miss.
Yep.
Everyone's fallen for fake news or, you know, a manipulated truth that's been pushed by a friend, colleague, or a bot. And it's almost impossible for the human brain to assess each one of those inputs as they come in and be right 100% of the time. And I think that's why you even see that with the president this weekend, you know, when he retweets an account that turns out not to be true to what it was claiming to be. It's just because it's a processing challenge for humans to actually go through this much content, this much news, this many stories, and try and decipher true from false.
I mean, that's presuming that he cares if it's true. This was a positive comment on Twitter that maybe he's just happy to pass it along and, you know, reflected well on him until it was discovered to be otherwise. But, hey, somebody's saying, you go, Mr. President, and he's happy to retweet it.
Yeah, it is opportunism and propaganda coming together. You know, if someone is putting out content that's supportive of you or helps your cause, why not use it? And I think that's where the trouble comes in with the Russia and the presidential campaign last year is that they were seeking out the same goal. And so if you're opportunistic without discretion, you're going to oftentimes run into these complications where people you may not want to be in bed with are in bed with you and you don't realize it.
Clint Watts, Sam Woolley, let me bring our callers in, if I may. Harrison in Erie, Kansas. Harrison, thank you for calling. You're on the air from Kansas.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Sorry if my phone sounds kind of bad. My speakers had a lot of metal on it.
Go for it.
The years. I just wanted to ask what the ratio really was between the bots on the Republican side, as you keep talking about, and the Democratic side, and what countries would have been pushing for Hillary Clinton to win the election and have the bots on their side.
Sam Woolley, what do you say to Harrison's question from Kansas there?
We did a study in the 8 days preceding the election, and we found that Republican bots or bots that were supporting Donald Trump were supporting and out-tweeting Clinton-related bots at a rate of 5-1. So a lot more sort of Republican-based bots than Democratic bots. That's not to say that they didn't exist, but there's a lot more Republican bots. And in terms of what countries might have tweeted on behalf of Hillary Clinton, that's harder to say. It tends to be that we saw groups that were suspiciously like civil society groups or super PACs or groups of engaged citizens, which you might call digital entrepreneurs, tweeting on behalf of Hillary. But we didn't see any evidence that there was a particular country or nation state building a botnet in support of her.
Clint, what about the kind of assumption there in Harrison's call that there's a country, you know, botting for everybody here? Is that the case?
I haven't seen it. I mean, it doesn't mean that it didn't happen. I was focused on Russian influence, and we came to the presidential race through watching those Russian influence networks when they were talking about things other than the presidential race. You know, this is in 2014 and 15. It may very well have happened. I'm doubtful it had anywhere near the scope or impact that the Russian effort did leading through 2016. And so, yeah, it's a possibility, but it's not something I witnessed.
Clint, how does it actually work? I mean, who's sitting around organizing these bot armies and deciding what messages they're going to pick up on? And, I mean, we hear about sort of, I'm reading here, troll factories in Russia and elsewhere. Right. Well, where else? And, you know, you've got bots, then you've got cyborgs, which I guess people use as shorthand for, what, accounts that have an automated angle but also an active human management angle. But everything has to be managed ultimately. Where are these networks getting managed from and by whom?
Yeah, I think that I'll hit a few points there. But I think the first one is that you can hide hacking, you know, breaching computers. Anonymity plays to the hacker's advantage. Ultimately, it's impossible to hide influence because the message originates somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so you can seed things out there. You can seed false information. But someone has to pick up the narrative in an enduring way and propagate it. And so I think that's why when we're talking about our Russian influence track, and we start with the source, which is what is the state-sponsored Russian outlets putting out? And let's see where that message goes to from there. In terms of a cyborg, this would be basically a semi-automated account. And so you'll notice that a message will be put out or from one account and it will be replicated in a very similar way on multiple accounts. But if you engage back with that automated account, it might very well respond back to you. So there's a human element behind it, which is different from what I call the artillery barrage bots, which are just spamming out content in an endless manner, you know, the same thing. Yeah. So if you try and speak to them, they don't speak back to you because they're not a real person. So all of this comes together. There's many ways to do it. So I think in some ways, a foreign nation, the way they can do it is they can set up their own bots if they want to. But an important element in all of this is having plausible deniability if you're a nation state. So you're better off to use existing companies, entrepreneurs, dark web people who have social bots that they run on the dark web, wherever it might be, and renting them. It's smarter to rent it out and have that bot put out your message. It also helps you in terms of advancing the audience building phase. The one thing about bots is you have to have a following ultimately for it to be effective. So once you build that audience and once you've got that following behind you, you want to sustain it. Once you have that audience, then you can influence it. You got to win the audience first and then influence it. So that's why a lot of these outfits, you'll see they'll have a bot. They own it, and it might be talking about one topic on one day, then talking about a totally different topic another day. That's because it's more of a commercial enterprise for the actual bot generator. So there's lots of different ways you can do it. The great thing about the social media bot system is it gets you heavy replication, heavy volume. The more people see things, the more they're likely to believe it, and it can hide your hand over a somewhat enduring basis. And that's why on our dashboard, I think the key thing about the Hamilton 68 dashboard is if you continue to look at that content that's being put out from it, we're hoping it will winnow away the audiences that are actually following it since they're not always being entirely honest about, you know, the content they're putting out and why they're doing it.
Mark in Boston. Mark, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm coming from more of an online marketer perspective. I'm a freelance marketer up here in Boston.
Okay.
And what we find is that a lot of these accounts you see in social media that they're paid for out of third-party servers coming from countries like India. It's been a big problem with, like, fake followers. And a lot of it isn't actually stemming from who you're following, but more from what you're searching. And the social media companies selling you out to different marketing companies to push their content towards you.
So, Mark, if you're in online marketing, that's a commercial enterprise. When you see that capacity pushed or aimed at politics, does it look potent to you? Does it look like a big deal or not?
It's very potent to someone that doesn't know how to recognize it, because you can very easily see something and be like, okay, these responses are a little too consistent, they're a little too on point. And to like a person that's trained on social media, you can see that, but to someone who just sees what they want to see, you see a community that supports your ideas.
And you float along on it, and there goes public opinion in one direction or another. I appreciate your call, Mark. One more right here, Rock Hill, South Carolina. Jason, thank you for calling, Jason. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just want to say this story, it sounds to me like just another one of these, hey, you voted for Trump, so you are a manipulated idiot. I have degrees in physics and engineering. I do not have a Twitter account. Mm-hmm. I do not have any social media accounts except for a Facebook, which I rarely use.
Okay.
And I voted for Trump, and I was not manipulated. Is it so hard to think that there are people out here who don't want to give our country away to Mexico with an open border?
It's definitely not hard to think that there are people out there who aren't on Twitter and not on Facebook who voted for Trump and wanted to vote for Trump. Absolutely, Jason. I totally get that. That's why I keep asking about what the net effect of all this is. But Sam, pick up on the gist of what Jason's saying. It looks to him like he's saying more or less like President Trump. This is making excuses for a political victory or loss. Get over it.
Well, first, I think that there's an important point here, which is that we live in a very multi-mediated environment. And what happens on Twitter and Facebook transcends Twitter and Facebook. So oftentimes journalists pick up stories on Twitter or Facebook, and oftentimes people spread what they learn on those sites to multiple other mediums. And so the idea that not being on Twitter or Facebook wouldn't have an effect on one's decision, I think, is not correct.
I mean, it spills over beyond the immediate social media audience.
Over.
Okay.
It absolutely spills over. And I think that the point of the previous caller about this being based in marketing is spot on. Bots and the bot usage has roots in internet spam and internet advertising and marketing. And we know that there is direct usage of this by candidates and campaigns throughout the world. Our study's been going for 4 years, and we've written a number of papers on the different ways that these actors have used bots.
They went after Macron in France just before the recent election.
Absolutely. They went after Macron in France. There was significant evidence of this in South Korea going on. There, Ecuador, Brazil, you name it. It's really been happening all over the world. The Russians, however, are at the peak of this, and they were particularly interested in the U.S. election. And so regardless of your political stance, I think that you should be concerned with this kind of transnational manipulation by a nation state that is, for all intents and purposes, authoritarian.
Clint, what do you say to Jason's perspective that this is just sour grapes about the election?
2 points in this. One, Twitter and Facebook are essential to driving mainstream media now, even so much so that when we are watching the Russians push the Incirlik story in July of 2016.
This is the base in Turkey. And remind us
yes.
of that story.
Yeah, so there was a story put out from RT and Sputnik News within a short time frame of each other, and it was powered on social media very aggressively in what we believed to be bots that we tracked.
Why did it matter?
And what it mattered was is they were essentially the bots and the social media around it were trying to communicate that, hey, Trump supporters and mainstream media who is not paying attention to this, we have nuclear weapons that are maybe vulnerable to a second Turkish coup. And this is like Benghazi. And when we went through the hashtags that were trending, one of the top ones that were trending that was media. The reason they do that is they want mainstream media that would show up in South Carolina to report on this story. If they report on that story, it takes on a life of its own. And that once that story is out there, just as Sam was talking about, Twitter and Facebook are the mechanism by which you get stories out the quickest. Twitter allows you to propagate a story around the world within seconds. Facebook allows you to saturate audience very targeted audiences with information. So if you can get the mainstream media to respond to it, then it takes on a life of its own. The other thing that I think is important for people to realize is the Russians do this because they pick elections that are close. We're talking about an election where the popular vote went to Clinton, the Electoral College went to Trump. We're plus or minus 1% or 2% in 7 or 8 states. So if you are able through information, if you're able through stories to just tip it 0.5%, 1% in only 2 or 3 swing states, you can actually have a tremendous effect on the outcome of an election. We have a very polarized landscape politically in our country right now. If you look at the Brexit vote, it was down to 1% essentially, difference between, you know, remain or leave. It provides an avenue where just the slightest push in one direction or another can have a major outcome. And that comes down to gerrymandering in our own country, which essentially results in only a few states really being in play. It makes us extremely vulnerable to these information campaigns, whether it's Russia, a political party, or someone else.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. If you're just joining us, we're talking this hour about bots. Bots shaping, twisting public opinion in the political wars of this country in 2016, right now, almost surely in the future. On Twitter and beyond, Facebook, you name it, coming in automated, automated accounts with somebody driving them, but maybe thousands of them, and maybe at a great distance, right into the heart of our political conversations, our understanding of what's going on in the world. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Is there any way to keep it real anymore? We have a president who lives on Twitter. Do you fear his view of the world is shaped by bots? What about yours? Are you so sure it's not? And what is the right answer to bots? Clint Watts is with us, former FBI special agent. He's now at the Center for Cyber and Homeland Security at George Washington University. He's part of the team that put together the Hamilton 68 dashboard that tracks Russian Russian's kind of bot deployment nonstop. We'll put up a link to it at our website, onpointradio.org, if you want to check that out. With us today from New York, Sam Woolley's with us from Seattle. He's director of research for the Computational Propaganda Project at Oxford Internet Institute. That's at the University of Oxford. You can join us at 800-423-8255. Sam, I'm still trying to get a picture of the HQ for all this. Like, where is it? Are there little HQs all over the place? Where is this stuff being directed out of? Is it being directed out of lots of places?
I think that the answer is that it's being directed out of lots of places. So it depends upon which context you're looking at, which country you're looking at. So in Russia, there's been a great deal of work done and a lot said about the operations within the agency, which is something that Adrian Chen wrote about in the New York Times. The Internet Research Agency is what it's called. Mm-hmm. And it's an agency that's a quasi-governmental and that it tweets a lot in support of Russian government and Russian media. So in Russia, that's one of the primary hubs. But in Poland, for instance, we know of some folks that do internet marketing that use bots for political purposes that have a tens of thousands strong bot army. And then we also know of folks in India and Vietnam and also in the United States. We've talked to lots and lots of people. Part of our process at the Computational Propaganda Project is to talk to the people who build and make bots. So we've talked to lots of people in the U.S. and some of these are marketers. Some of them are citizens that are rather than trying to make money, make a point.
How do you do that? How do you make money with this?
That comes down to aspects of sites like YouTube and advertisement placement. Okay. And so the better you are able to drive traffic to a website, i.e. using bots to amplify a particular position or even political position, then you're able to make money off of the internet infrastructure. And that's what we saw with kind of the Macedonian teen situation.
These are the ones putting out fake news before the election last fall and making money with it.
Right. It was a effort to generate capital. And that absolutely is part of it. I think that in Western democracies, particularly in the United States, we see companies that sell these bots, as Clint said, but we also see a lot of people. There's been somewhat of a democratization of propaganda in Western countries where a lot of people have some computer coding knowledge, wherein the Open API, the application programming interface on Twitter, which mm-hmm. is where you launch software, anyone can do it, is used by people to amplify their own political views.
I mean, the whole realm seems so fraught with fake all kinds of things. I mean, we saw back early this year, there was a journalist who ran an audit on President Trump's Twitter account, found that 68% of his then 20 million followers were real. Newsweek ran a story in May saying that they had 30 million followers, but only 51% were real. I don't know what that matters. I mean, it just pumps up a number of followers, but you just start to wonder about reality on all kinds of fronts here. Anna in Columbia, Missouri. Thank you for calling, Anna. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My thought on this, I'm concerned about the underlying social issues that are allowing these bots to become so powerful. And my kind of feeling recently is that there's been a surge in anti-intellectualism, kind of the idea that my opinion is just as important as your facts. And I wondered what your thoughts were on that and how it plays into the role of these bots in our society.
Clint, are we somehow sociologically particularly vulnerable to this manipulation right now?
Yes. I think a big part of this is people believe that if they have access to the internet, they have access to all information and then can make judgments outside of expertise, meaning it doesn't matter what the topic is, climate change, immigration, Russia, or even personal health, you know, issues. We've seen a lot of issues with fake vaccine scares, and that's one that propagates around the internet very quickly. What we're finding is we know more and we understand less as a society, despite the fact that we have access to more information. And so, over time, this essentially means that there is no authority or there is no expertise that can be pushed forward. And I think to the bigger point of misinformation beyond just Russia or any single state is that if we can't arrive at some consensus, use scientific process, put forth evidence, and have some sort of academic experience, ultimately the country will be very far adrift. I mean, whether it's the medical field, the legal field, any sort of technology, there has to be some sort of standard around what is fact versus fiction. And that gets muddier every day. And it's a belief system that oddly is very much similar to Russia, where there is no real belief in fact or fiction. It's just different levels or different types of public relations where everybody's pushing forth their opinions against each other, and whoever's the strongest wins. And that
But that's
is,
not what America prided itself on.
Exactly.
Forever.
Yeah, and that's what we're seeing happening in our own country. We're actually taking on this, how do you know, what about? You know, it's always one of those two, well, what about this or how do you know? Well, you know, maybe we should believe doctors who have spent 30 years doing this, or a climate scientist, or lawyers, or whatever expertise it might be. But for some reason, our country is moving more to that, that if it feels good and it's what I want to believe, then that is what I want to believe. And I can then rewrite history or facts to support my position. And that does not work in a democracy. If you don't have some ground, some root in truth, if you don't have the fourth pillar of democracy, which is the media and journalism, we will fall apart and we'll essentially segregate and segment into different audiences that don't really talk to each other and don't overlap.
Sounds like a super happy hunting grounds or Valhalla for propagandists right there. My gosh. D.C.
Yes.
In Fort Lauderdale, Florida. D.C., thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you. I was addressing this problem many decades ago. In fact, I started teaching my students about the dangers of propaganda deception in 1968. And I see this world of bots that we have now as just another technique in this larger world of propaganda deception. I was concerned back in the 60s because I was seeing all these large companies advertising, using marketing to influence young people to buy junk food and sugary cereals. So I started teaching my students about the dangers of this type of propaganda, and I've been studying it ever since. So for me, with the insights that I have after decades of this, I instantly recognize the techniques of propaganda deception when I come across them, including with this newer technique of using bots.
So how do we get out of it when it's so, now, these days, with the explosion of media, it's so all-encompassing, DC?
And, well, here was my solution back then, which I think is still true today. All the knowledge about it is out there. It, and the history is out there, whether you look at Joseph Goebbels and his effect on getting Hitler into power, or politicians yelling out during the State of the Union address, "You lie," or whatever it is, it's all out there. And so it's a matter of a problem of ignorance. And what is the solution to the problem of ignorance? Education. That's what I did back starting in the 60s.
Yep.
And I think that that's what we need to do today. And by the way, anyone who thinks that the deceptive propaganda the Russians engaged in the election of 2016 had no effect on the election is a victim of propaganda deception.
DC, we can hear your long focus on it right there, and your prescription, your answer, education, solid education. Lord knows every country that wants to be strong needs that. I really appreciate your call. Let me get one more right here, if I may, from Guyton, Georgia. Julia, thank you for calling, Julia. You're on.
Thank you. I grew up in the Cold War era, and in that time, we pretty much assumed we knew the roots of the enmity between the USSR and the U.S., and I grew up thinking that it was primarily that they wanted to push their system on us and turn the world and turn the world communist. But today, that can't be the case. Things have changed in Russia, and I was wondering if we could, if you could address, in a nutshell, what are the primary motivations for modern Russia interfering in our system? What are they getting out of that? What would they get out of that if successful?
I'm very happy for your call, Julia. Clint, what do you say?
Yeah, there are several parts to it. One, and I will say the immediate part of it is they're anti-NATO, anti-EU. They would like to see both of those things dissolve. If they can, they can then move in a one-on-one basis to pursue diplomatic, military, economic goals they have.
To give them more sway in
right.
Europe.
Mm-hmm. What stopped them in many ways since the Cold War has been those two, you know, the NATO military alliance and then, you know, the European Union since then. They would like to break up all of these unions. And that goes with the United States as well, taking a different stance towards Europe. So I think you'll see that repeated in the propaganda and sometimes even repeated by our own politicians is, you know, why are we dealing with Germany? You know, we've taken a very hard line with Germany and a very soft line with Russia, which is a little bit strange. The next part of it, though, is really, I think, the more scary part of it, which is they want to have a system and they want to see leaders around the world that support their worldview and their foreign policy objectives. So leaders that are for the Syrian regime, you know, against terrorists, or for reconstituting essentially, and I think this is a big motivation of Putin, regaining or rebuilding the Russian population around the world that was left when the Soviet Union dissolved and sort of taking that. And that goes into the Crimea discussion. The last part is that they would like to see the U.S. be more nationalist and less globalist. And this comes through in their propaganda repeatedly. Disengage. They want the U.S. to disengage so that Russia's role as a world power is reinstated. They very much have been seen, and I think President Obama even referred to them as a second tier, you know, sort of country. Mm-hmm. They want to be back on the world stage. And I think the last part, which is somewhat frightening for me when I watch this sort of propaganda wave, is it's very anti-immigration, anti-refugee, and very pro-white. And so what you see is a you know, inside the rhetoric against terrorists, there's also a white nationalist sort of phenomenon that you see Russia pushing. And that is caught on with audiences far and wide across Europe and the United States.
What about democracy itself? I mean, it's being influenced by the bots, but is there an attitude toward democracy that's implicit here?
Yes. Russia's propaganda is very anti-democracy. I think you've already seen, not just because of Russia, but what you've already seen is with their active measures, the goal is to break democracies from the inside out by discrediting their institutions, their elected officials, destroying media outlets that provide, you know, a balanced check on it, and by doing harm to the populace so that they can't come together in unity under their government. And that can be through race or religion or whatever it might be. They don't believe in democracy as being a just system, and they would like to see it collapse. And if you look at, you know, U.S. polls about do you believe democracy is the best form of governance, for the first time, at least in my lifetime, you're starting to see a dip where Americans don't necessarily believe that's the case or might be open to other alternatives. And so whether that's Russia that powered it or piggybacked on it, I think it's a dangerous phenomenon for our country.
One more call, Kyle in Atlanta. Kyle, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hey, Tom. I'll be brief. I just wanted to say that I think that propaganda has been a problem throughout human history. It's human nature. I think that today it's just more magnified by these things like bots because it gives a hyper vehicle of social media to deliver it. Mm-hmm. And the key is self-education and autonomous thought and not just taking hearsay as gospel, to actually open your own eyes and try to see the truth for yourself. And that's about it.
We'll take it right there, Kyle, and that's strong, and I appreciate it. Sam, is there a way to push back on this if collectively Americans decide that this is a corrupting influence in the time of social media dominance? Is there a way to actually shut this down, or we just have to live with these antibodies in the system?
I think that there's short-term, medium-term, and long-term ways to shut this down. I think that the short-term ways are along the lines of what Clint's doing, putting together this dashboard and illuminating the issue for the public and getting information out there that's real time about how Russia is interfering in U.S. politics. There's other folks doing similar work, and I think this is really important. I think medium-term goals need to include the development of tools that allow the public to ascertain what's going on in their social media feeds. This includes bot tracking, but also should include some kind of more ecological view of how information on social media is being spread. I think that identifying a bot is useful, but I think that understanding like and attributing where the bot is coming from and what the intentions are is even more important. And in terms of long-term goals, I think we really need to get on with some digital and media literacy, and that push has to happen now, and it has to happen in U.S. schools.
Well, you two are right out there working hard on it. We appreciate that. We benefit from it today, and we're very grateful to you for being here with us, Sam Woolley, in Seattle today at the Oxford Internet Institute at the University of Oxford, the Director for Computational Propaganda Project there. Sam, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Clint Watts at the Center for Cyber and Homeland Security at George Washington University. Check out his Hamilton 68 dashboard on bot activity. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.com. Clint Watts, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for all your input. As always, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.